Welcome back, everyone. It is finally another episode of Everything is a Spring. Sorry for the delay. Derek, how are you, buddy?
April Fools, it's not actually an episode of Everything's a Spring. What's up,
Jim? Whoops!
Whoops, forgot all to pre-load. Record.
Yep. Man, it has been... So March was just a huge month for me. I also spiked my audio, so that's good. But... Yeah, March has been just a hugely busy month for me. I don't know about you, but pretty much every weekend has just been packed of stuff. I had two robotics competitions that we went to. I volunteer with First Robotics. We have a local high school team that I was working with. So we had two of our competitions this past month. So that ate up a lot of my time. And of course, we went to Hawaii.
Yeah, so we actually got the job.
We had that. We did. And Derek, what was like the highlight of your Hawaii experience that you can share on air?
That is an odd disclaimer. But no, it's hard to pick a moment, right? I have to say my personal favorite was probably the day we spent at the Pearl Harbor Monument and seeing the USS Arizona. Not just because like planes cool, because planes is cool and so is the Navy. But it was a moment we were on the, the Bowfin submarine, right? And I think the group was a little bit in front of me. They were like you and all the boys were taking pictures, you know, off the side. And I like kind of had a moment where it's just like, we're here. Like, these are my people. Like, they traveled across the world pretty much with me. And it was just really surreal. Like, I don't know. I hadn't been on an adventure in a long time, and it kind of took me back to some of the adventures that we used to go on, like when we worked together and all that. So it was just really nice. It's hard to pick a moment, like either that or that Basalt Beach. Just a beautiful place.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, I would actually kind of agree. Like, there were definitely some highlights. Like, going up to the lighthouse was super cool. The lighthouse trail, maybe we can like throw in some pictures, in the YouTube feed here as well to kind of explain what we're talking about. Pearl Harbor was really, very, I wouldn't call it, like cool is not the right word, but it was very like awe inspiring, I think maybe is a better word for it. It was an amazing experience.
It
right?
was emotional.
But
I was not expecting
it was.
Cry.
Yeah. I mean, the USS Arizona is... I'm not exactly sure how to describe. I mean, it's very somber, but it's also like such a powerful. It's such a powerful monument, right?
Right, and it's a reminder. Like, this is a time before us. Like, I guess the only time in our since we've been alive that America's been directly attacked on its homeland was 9/11, right? And we were pretty young when that went down. I think we were both 3 or 4. So, you know, not huge memories about 9/11. Going back to this, I kind of put myself in the position of someone who was a citizen at that time. When you got that radio announcement that America's under attack for the first time in, what, 2 decades at this point? Almost 2 decades?
From when?
I'm trying to put history
between,
together. Like the 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because we were 20, directly involved in World War One.
We were, but I don't know that there was ever an attack on American soil.
That's
you know,
fair.
There was like the
technology wasn't that
I
far
think
along.
The closest thing that we had to an attack on American soil, I guess, would have been like, okay, there's the Lusitania, but you know, that they were carrying weapons. But the what was it? The Zimmerman telegram, right?
Oh yeah.
Where Germany was trying to convince Mexico to go to war with us.
Right. So a plan, but not an actual, like it was a thwarted plan. Right.
Correct. I think really the last time that a, Civil War aside, because that was Americans fighting Americans, but the last event, I guess, that would have been considered a foreign power invading or attacking American soil would have been like the War of 1812.
Sheesh. So it was over 100 years since.
It was like, 150 years.
And I think that's my point, right? Like, it's something that's so rare. Like, it is you might miss it between generations. I can't imagine the fear, you know, the anger, the confusion. It's not like they had TikTok where we're seeing drone footage of people getting destroyed. You're just hearing, like, what, morning and nightly updates over the radio. And it was,
yeah,
it's surreal to go there. And I won't spend all, I could spend the whole episode talking about Pearl Harbor. Jim saw in person my excitement when I was walking through the Air Museum. There is a moment in each country's history where you choose what you're going to be, right? It happens multiple times. Like, Britain's been around much longer than us, but in a country that's only been around for a few hundred years, we look at some of the events that we've seen in our time, and you just think back to how a military responded, how our military had to respond, and things like the attack on the USS Arizona, the attack on 9/11, and all of the backlash that comes from that. Like, years and years of fighting, hundreds of thousands of men on all sides. It's really somber, and it really puts the perspective of war as it is. It is terrible. It's this horrible thing. You shouldn't be hyping it up or excited to see the drone footage. Unfortunately, our generation's kind of desensitized because you're getting live-streamed video of war to your house. These are things that combat troops might rarely see. And
right.
It was a huge moment. Like, my life changed on that Hawaii trip, Jim. Right? Straight up. Not just because of Pearl Harbor, but I was able to put some things in perspective I'd been mulling over for a long time.
Good. Good. Yeah, I think it was awesome. I wouldn't say it was life-changing necessarily for me, but I really had a great time. And you know, what it was for me is it had been like such a long time since I'd really had, you know, a group of guys to hang out with and just go have fun and be, you know, hooligans and, you know, see a little bit of the world that we hadn't seen before. Yeah. And that was awesome, you know, so really, really
and
great.
And it was a good group experience. Too. Like, I got really lucky with group. My friends. Like, unfortunately only six folks were able to go, but of those six, you know, folks have been around me for a long time. I was surprised of, like, it's weird seeing different friend groups merge anytime you're an adult, but that went really well. Like, we spent hours and hours in the car together, and it was like we all knew each other for way longer.
Yeah, everybody just kind of clicked into place, and it was a good time. So I think it went swimmingly. And I think part of it, too, is, like, we had enough space from each other that if we wanted to just go off and do our own thing, we totally could.
Right. We had time.
We had plenty of time. And I was, you know, we all came back together to do these kind of larger things. And that was fun. So, it was a phenomenal experience.
Mm. But to piggyback off of, like, the preload, cause I guess we owe the people some preload. We haven't talked to them since what, February?
It's been a while. I don't know exactly. But yeah, it's been a hot minute.
And that's on me, right? So I went to Hawaii with my friends. And it was awesome, and I was feeling really relaxed, and I was bringing the aloha home with you, like the signs in the airport say, so you don't, like, harass a flight attendant or something. I guess that's supposed to cool people down as they're boarding. Because the signs were, like, right above the terminal, and I was like, that's some marketing from the 90s, but I'm here for it.
Oh, yeah.
I get home, right? I had to go pick up my grandpa from my mom's house. So, note, I've been up for, like, 16 hours at this point. I'm already tired. I don't sleep well on planes. So, you know, I get to the house, hop in the car, go grab him. So at this point, it's like 9:30 local. Like, it's getting pretty late. I start to get my pop to bed and I notice, oh, the, like, heating's off. That's weird. Like, maybe my mom turned it off before she brought him over. And I was like, ooh, but the hot water's off. I noticed when I was trying to wash my hands, I was like, okay, something's amiss. So I go downstairs to try to relight the hot water heater. And I immediately, my feet sink into what's like 3/4 of an inch to an inch of water through the carpet.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. And I had that moment where it's just like, you get to choose your aloha spirit. You know, don't let this break you. And, you know, so I called the HVAC folks, got that sorted out so my pop could be comfortable and we could stay in the house for the night. And daylight just showed me how much trouble I had.
Oh, no.
I'll make a long, long story short. I spent the next 2 weeks trying to get these things resolved. On one hand, we had groundwater flooding. Apparently, our gutters were just so destroyed on this house, like so detached. Enough water had pooled near the foundation to cause groundwater flooding through the basement and it wiped out the transformer of the heating unit. It wiped out all of the carpet. Like, it clearly hadn't been long, but since Pop was off-site at my mom's house while I was gone, no one was there to notice. Like, this is one of those things, if I had been home, I would have noticed it the second it got cold, or the second I tried to use water that was hot. But because I was gone for so long, no one knew. I'm going to jump forward a little bit. So I have these contractors working on it. I get the boys at Call Amigos, not a sponsor, not an ad, but they've done right by me so many times. If you're in the Atlanta area, you need junk removal or contracting work, look them up. See, they're good folks. They're about our age. And I love folks that work hard and, you know, can prove it through their work. So they made my life really easy. Fast forward to the plumbing situation, right? So there was no plumbing problem with this flood. So that's a weird part of the story. You might be like, yeah, Derek, why are you bringing up plumbing? That doesn't make any sense. Turns out I had two floods. Separate parts of the house, completely unrelated. And if I hadn't tried to install a dishwasher, I would have never known that this rusted pipe, which I'm going to show on the YouTube, and I think I sent you a couple pictures of it before, Jim.
I seen those.
This cast iron pipe rusted all the way through. And the leading theory through all the tax assessors and the plumbers that have been by here is that was probably like that for years, and you just had no idea.
No.
The only reason I say that is they fixed the pipe, like the PVC and such, and then immediately started to like drain water through the sink, and it just clogged right up, which means all of the downwind pipe from that drain connection has probably not seen water in the better part of 35, 40 years, if we're being honest.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I had to...
So it's just draining into like the...
Just into the crawl space.
The crawl space? Oh, geez.
Just into the crawl space. Like for who knows how many years. So I'm getting all that mitigation work done. I'll admit, I had to put my Bob the Tool Man, Tim the Tool Man belt on, and pretend I'm not a Gen Zer for a moment and DIY as much as I can. Because one thing that they don't tell you when you have home insurance about groundwater flooding is that it is often not covered by standard home insurance. I learned this $7,000 into home repairs. Yikes.
Oh, no.
So my hope was, okay, so all the groundwater flooding situation, I'm going to have to just bust out as much of that as I can, like, get your hands dirty, get the job done. I was able to do a lot of it. So I actually saved myself what I estimate based on quotes I got from other contractors that were going to do some of these things. I saved about $6,000 to $7,000 in DIY, right? So
that's pretty good.
My little Bob the Builder tool bench has come in handy. I'll drop a picture for the YouTube. But yeah, that was my last 3 weeks. So apologies on not recording. I've had fans, contractors, dehumidifiers running in my house almost constantly for the last 2 weeks. And that was after we took a break off. We were like, oh, we're going to record an episode in Hawaii so they won't have to wait that long. Jim, you want to tell them how that went?
So it was really actually, we mentioned these basalt beaches. And it was basically, let me set the stage for you. It's a beautiful day, like beautiful, partly cloudy skies,
like
sun is shining,
degrees.
Strong, nice breeze coming around, and a pretty stiff breeze, I'll say. It was a pretty stiff breeze. And we get to we're on the top of this bluff, right, this huge cliff bluff thing, and it's all basalt, right, it's all volcanic rock. And that's where kind of like the lighthouse was that we mentioned earlier. And maybe we'll drop the picture of all of us kind of with our film spot in the background. Because you can kind of see it from the top of the trail that we went up to this lighthouse. And phenomenal, amazing view. Bluest skies, bluest oceans I've ever seen. And so we go down and we say, this would be the perfect spot to record our podcast. On these basalt beaches, there's this spot where you can drive down to it, so you're not like climbing down, you know, a cliff to get to, but you drive down to it, and there's a little sandy patch, but a lot of it is this basalt. And we get set up, and we have the GoPro, we're recording, we kind of do our mic check, and we get it going as best we can. Of course, it's windy, we're right by the ocean, like you can, you know, I don't know if you can quite hear like the spray and the splash of the waves on the on the recording, but you can definitely hear some of the wind noise. And so we start recording. I think we get about 10 minutes in, if even that.
Not even.
And then it just starts pouring rain, like big fat raindrops, hard. And so we just throw everything in a bag, in a backpack, and then just sprint back to the car. Basically, we have like a towel over the computer and the sensitive electronics, and just praying that it's not ruined.
Like the face on some bystanders, like you saw the bystanders around. They're like, oh God, two dudes in their 20s setting up mic equipment. We know this scene.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just, the pure joy they must have gotten watching us just scramble, like scrambling back to the car. And for reference, here's the context, right? Jim came on the trip, what, 2 days after the rest of the group? Because you had some business to attend to, right? Yeah, I had to.
Well, sort of. So my, it wasn't really business. I mean, it was my family, right? But so it was the first time in a number of years, I don't know exactly how long, but a pretty good number of years that all of my sisters were in Atlanta. And we'd kind of planned this out because my little sister is getting married in May. So I'll be, I don't know, I won't be available that weekend to record, but, so she's getting married in May. So we kind of planned this as like, not like a bachelorette party, but like, you know, like a siblings premarital get together type thing. Right. So it was my dad and my mom and my three sisters. And then, Steffi's fiance, Aaron, who tagged along with us. And we had like a whole day event. You know, it was basically Saturday. We went to like the botanical gardens, the Atlanta Botanical Gardens, which are beautiful. We went to like our childhood pizza restaurant, you know, and that was really fun to go
just
back there.
Going down memory lane, being kids one more
going
time.
Going down memory lane. Exactly. You know, and, you know, dad bought us all pizza at Fellini's and all that stuff. And it was really, really fun. And we played some games in the evening and it was awesome, you know, so I wasn't going to miss that for the world. But, and then Sunday morning, I flew out, right, and joined you guys. And because of the time difference, you know, I was able to get there at basically dinner time.
Yeah.
And have dinner with you guys and spend the rest of the evening with hanging out with the boys. So it was awesome.
Super hype. And so for those first 2 days, you know, one of the tasks that I gave the group was like, hey, we're just going to go exploring. We're boys on a boys trip. So we didn't plan nothing. We planned when folks got to the airport. I was like, I'm going to stay sober during the day so I can drive folks around on airport days as we need to. And sure, it worked out really great. Like some people, I know I'm very type A, like at work and in my like personal life, because that's just how I am. On vacation, somehow that switch gets turned, I won't say off, but down a good touch. And it's easier to just say, we're going to go in a direction. And if you see something cool, we're just going to do it. So we'd been scouting out places, you know, we'd done a lap around the north side of the island. We ran into this basalt bluff and we're like, wow, this would be a great podcast recording spot. It rained that day, but every rainstorm we saw up until that point had been, I'm not even joking, 15 to 45 seconds of just, oh, here's a light shower and then completely clear. We got that every day, like at least once or twice a day, the whole time that up until Jim got there. So when the rain started, I'm sitting there like, It's just going to pass us to the north. I mean, this is going to be easy. All we got to do is just, it's just going to pass us to the north. We just wait it out. Nope. We got the one actual storm. The moment we pull out equipment. And if that isn't, I was like, I don't know how much I buy into the whole like religion thing right now. But if there's ever a sign not to record the podcast, that's the best sign you can get. So we didn't.
That's very true. That's very true. And Derek, you were such a goddamn trooper that day too, because was that the day that we were like, you were like, hey, Jim, can you drive today? And then you were just like, I'm going to hammer three mimosas. And then we were like, let's go on a hike.
No, that was the next day.
Okay.
For reference, I had been doing the driving for the most part. So, you know, we'd do our driving around. And, you know, I had to pimp out this trip. I don't know when the next time I'm going to go. We did not get the convertible. We got this nice family-sized SUV, huge amount of space, perfect for 5-6 dudes. And, I'd been driving. I was like, my name's on the license. It would be irresponsible for me to make someone else drive and something happens, right? So I'm driving, you know, we're doing road trip style. Sometimes like at dinner time every day, we'd kind of think about things we'd want to do, but we really chose the day of. And I felt that was so freeing.
Yeah.
One day, you know, we had a pretty big driving day. We did a whole road trip, you know, it was a great time, but I was exhausted. And I was like, all right, I do want a day drink at least once while I'm here. So I asked Jim. He was so kind. He's like, hey, listen, I'll drive that day for you. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yesterday was so easy. All they had to do was sit in the car and like vibe, look, take in the views. That'd be some good stuff, right? Not for Derek. We get to the first site and I'm like, oh, this is a cool spot. Like, I'm really excited. We have breakfast. I pound, like Jim said, three mimosas. So I'm like, I'm just going to be drunk all day. This is going to be a great time. The first stop is a hike, and the hike's straight up.
So, we went to like this crater, right? And there's like all these pillboxes on top of the crater edge that were like used in World War II to like guard the port, right? Or guard the harbor. And I think they were more like scouting embankments. I mean, they didn't really look like they were big enough to really house any substantial guns. Right. But
it was like a watchtower.
It was like a watchtower type thing, but it was like a pretty substantial hike up to the top of it. And we have this great picture where Derek's just there in his sunglasses looking so done with the whole affair.
You're going to have to, I'm going to have to be way more specific for finding that picture for the video because that day, I think that was my face the whole day. I was trying to keep the aloha spirit, but I was I won't say very drunk. If drunk was a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 you're going to the hospital, it's like 11:30 a.m. and I'm at like a 5 or 6. Getting down on it. Note, I'm drinking up the mountain.
Yes. But you were such a good sport about it because you never complained.
I made it my goal not to complain because I was like, if I'm going to feel this way with a view like this, it could be worse, right?
That's
and I have five people to carry me in case I just flat out can't do it. So that's perfect.
That's true. It was great. But Derek, you were just such a trooper about it. And that's one of the things I love about you. And
I appreciate that. I was trying.
It was a great time.
I was trying. It was funny though. Like it was one of those situations like, yes, the joke's on me, but everyone was having a good time. And I didn't want to kill that vibe, even though I was actively dying. Like there was a moment where you're pretty much going up a regular like concrete path and then it changes to a like kind of stairs step path. And then it's just a big ramp up to the top. And there's this moment where you get around the corner and you're like, oh, we're finally near the top. Like we've been walking for about, what, 3/4 of a mile? We have to be near the top. You turn the corner around this rock face and you see just this zigzag of trail that you're not even halfway up. So we get up the zigzag of trail. My mood's tanking at this point. I'm like, okay, at least we're almost done. We're almost to the top. Let's do it. We get to this like plateau and there's two directions to go. On my right.
Well, this was up. We had just gotten out of the tunnel, right? This was right after the tunnel, right?
Right. And it's, look to your right. No less than what? 85, 90 steps. Pretty steep grade. That's a little shortcut to the next part. And I'm like, okay. And then if you don't turn to your left, it's a more accessible, like wheelchairish accessible. You know, you could roll up this gentle slope, but it's significantly longer. So I'm over it at this point. I'm like, I've made it this far. I got to get to the top. I bust up the stairs one by one. It wasn't very athletic feat. It didn't look good. It was like a grandma wheezing up the stairs with her cane, but I made it, right? And I get to the top. There's another tunnel. And I'm like, literally, this is the light at the end of the tunnel. Why is this tunnel so dark? That's weird. This is weird for an end, right? I'd see some sunlight or something. Nope. Get to the tunnel and it's my worst nightmare as someone who is genuinely horrified of heights, a spiral staircase. I look to my friend Raz and I'm just like, how many flights of stairs is this? And in my head, I already made the decision. If it's above a certain number, I'm done. And he's like, it looks about like 5 stories. You know, like 5 flights. I literally didn't say a word to him. I said nope to the tunnel, walked back down the 85 stairs, found me a comfy bench with a view, and I was like, I'll see them when they pass me, and if too many hours pass by, I'm leaving. I'm done. I tried. This wasn't a, like, I couldn't do it. It was the principle of the matter.
Oh, man, what a great time. But it was another phenomenal viewpoint. We'll have to drop some more pictures. But anyway, I think we're getting a little bit off topic. So at this point, I think what we'll do is if the footage, if the audio from Hawaii is salvageable, we'll go ahead and play it now. And if not, we'll go ahead and jump back in and we'll just go ahead and recap the whole episode and jump back into it where we pick up from Hawaii. Yeah. So thank you all so much. And let's skip to the Hawaii footage.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if it's just useless and there's just no cut there?
That's probably what's going to happen.
That's what I'm afraid of.
At which point we'll just leave this.
Yeah, they'll get this. But here's the thing, right, Jim? As the editor and producer of this podcast, right, I make it an effort not to know anything about this story. This time I was like, you know what? It'll be more fun for me when I'm editing later this week if I don't look at the footage, so I don't know how screwed it is. And as it gets closer, I'm just like, oh, there's a fine line between salvageable and not salvageable. We're about to find it.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe we play it at the end. I don't know. We'll do something with it.
We'll see what it's like.
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Everything is a Spring podcast. We're coming to you live from Oahu, Hawaii. Derek, how are you, buddy?
Jim, I'll be honest with you. I really couldn't be any better. I mean, we're in paradise. I mean, just look at where we're at. We're on a beautiful basalt beach. I'll add the beach in post because I can't remember which one we're at because we've been to so many. But as you can see, we're the weirdos. I've got a mixer, laptop, and mic in hand so that we can get you a very special first video edition of Everything's a Spring.
Absolutely. I'm pretty excited, man. How has your Hawaii trip been so far?
It's been paradise. Like, I wanted to celebrate my birthday with my friends. And unfortunately, of course, not everyone could come, but I really couldn't have planned it better. We've been just kind of going with the flow, you know, trying to get a little bit of the island life while we're here, you know, shaka shaka, all that good stuff. And I've never been so relaxed. Personally, if I could stay forever, I really would, straight up. Not even gonna lie to you.
That's fair. So Derek, we've been to a lot of places, but I think one of your favorites was definitely the on Pearl Harbor, that they had like the aviation museum. Can you tell us a little bit about your infatuation with planes?
So ever since I was a wee boy, from like, what, I guess flight simulator days, I had Flight Simulator X Acceleration Pack on my laptop. And for the longest time, I genuinely thought I was gonna join the Air Force and like go that route. Life took a different direction, but I've always had I've been studying planes like it's my job. And for my whole life, I've wanted to go to the Pearl Harbor Aviation Museum and the one in Washington, D.C. I was not prepared for the Pearl Harbor experience here in Hawaii on the main island. What's crazy about it is it was very pensive.
Yeah.
We saw the wreckage of the USS Arizona. Yep. And, you know, it's one of those situations, like it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. If you haven't been, you got to go. Learn a little bit about the history. But the long and short of it is, you know, over 900 Marines, Navy men died on the initial attack of Pearl Harbor. And we got to see the monument and actual wreckage of where those souls lie to this day. On top of that, there was, of course, generations of aircraft from World War II all the way up to the modern day. I think they stopped with the F-18. And if I don't stop talking about planes, the preload's going to be 20 minutes. I'll try to overlay some pictures that we took there and show you a little bit of how we got to this point.
Oh, that's right. Our YouTube feed for this episode is going to be absolute fire.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
Excited about it. So, well, in that case, because we're also running on a battery, so we don't have much time here today.
And here's the worst part. If worst case scenario, you get first half in Hawaii, and if we have to go record the rest on the other way, you know, we tried.
It'll be all right.
Hopefully you're enjoying what you're seeing. And Jim, this is an engineering podcast.
Let's get into it.
All right.
So, Derek, what I've got for you today is a story that centers around planes. I'm kind of thinking we might do our next small episode around...
It's currently raining, so every now and then we're going to hide in fear, but we're not going to let it stop us.
So our next... I'm thinking our next little mini-series might be about planes and plane disasters.
Okay.
Because that's fascinating.
That hypes me up so much.
And also, you're going to enjoy the shit out of
it. Oh, God.
So... but today we're talking about the Boeing 247. Derek, do you know anything about the Boeing 247?
That is well before any like aviation history. I know I'm going to guess from what you were telling me earlier, because just by the designation 24, this is probably the what, 40s?
This is early. So the Boeing 247 debuts, I believe, in February of 1933. And it was a commercial airliner that held, guess how many passengers?
36.
10.
10.
That's where we were in 1933.
You got to start somewhere. That's the thing they don't tell you. We get to the 747 in the future, but 10.
10.
And it was probably really comfortable compared to what we got today.
I don't know. I mean, so like you look at pictures of the airplane, we'll overlay some, yeah. And it's pretty like bare bones. I mean, it looks pretty big, but I think it's just because of the scale. But the Boeing 747, excuse me, the Boeing 247 was a pretty influential plane for a couple of reasons. It was one of the first like all metal planes, right? Okay. Like full metal, semi monocoque structures.
So at this point, we were doing wood only, like wood structures.
Yeah, I mean, we're like the Wright brothers first flew in like what, 1914,
something like that.
Yeah. Or 1908, yeah. I think. So like we're like 20 years out from the birth of aircraft as we know them.
And
right?
Also like what, 50 years out or not 30, 40 years out from space flight.
Yeah.
You have to think about how fast the technology changed, but we're starting in the 30s today. Let's hear about this Boeing aircraft.
Absolutely.
I have some opinions on Boeing. I just want to say the Everything's a Spring podcast does not endorse or de-endorse Boeing. Don't sue us is what I'm saying. I'm just some guy.
Hey, I'll fuck with Big Boeing.
I'll fuck with Big Boeing.
We're not gonna.
They got enough money.
We're not gonna fuck with Big Swift. But
Big,
we'll,
Big Swifty, absolutely not. Boeing, they can, you know, just wings.
It's raining, so would you put my backpack under the rock? Thank you.
We have a. We got to shout out our production crew today. They
shout out our. We'll bring them on stage before the episode.
Raz
out.
And Will have so satisfactorily been our production crew on our first live set. We kind of forced them to.
We did.
We're not paying them, so. You know, don't feel too bad.
We're paying them in beer.
Let's go ahead and get started.
But anyway, so yeah, so the 7, excuse me, I keep saying this, the 247, one of the things that was really interesting about it, again, I told you about like the all metal construction, and then also one of the other things that was cool about it is it's really one of the first planes that features like a full cantilevered wing.
Oh,
it's raining very hard now.
I think we just send it.
I think we just send it? All right. And so... I don't know, man. I think this is going to get pretty bad.
All right, we're going to go ahead and cut there. And,
we'll come back.
We'll be. Thank you for watching this episode of Everything's a Spring.
We'll be right back.
Is a spring. All right, go ahead and cut her.
It's not happening.
And we're back from Hawaii. Welcome back, gentle listener. I hope you had as much fun in Hawaii as we did. But let's go ahead and jump in. So, Derek, we're talking today, and we talked a little bit about this in Hawaii. You love airplanes.
I love
it.
It
is
airplanes.
It is one of your great passions in life.
If I could go
so
back
tell us
in
a little
time,
bit about that.
If I could go back in time and not be a biology major and go into aerospace engineering, that would be my one realistic wish. Not that it's too late or anything. I could easily go back, but school costs money, and I'm already done with that part for now. So
that's facts.
My love of planes started when I was a child, when I was just a wee lad. I remember this was when my mom and dad were still married. I remember my dad gets home from GameStop. I see the GameStop bag and I'm super hyped because no one plays games except for me. I know this is my present. And he gets me this box set, which was Flight Simulator X Acceleration Edition. It was a CD-ROM, like two disc CD-ROM of Flight Sim X with the DLC that had come out at that time. And at first I was like, oh, this is odd, but you know, I'll try it. And when I tell you, I played that thing for at least 2 months on mouse and keyboard before I even owned a joystick. That's where I think my addiction began. From that point, I started reading books. You know, I started watching, I think this was the early days of YouTube. So I was like watching YouTube documentaries, anything that History Channel had about planes. I was all in. Fast forward to high school. We had this program, the Air Force sponsors called Civil Air Patrol, right? It's a 4-year program you can do in high school. It's like the Air Force equivalent of ROTC for high schoolers, I believe, where you're doing, search and rescue. You're learning, you know, basic triage and medical, like field medic stuff, like a little bit of everything to try to get you to go into the Air Force as an officer. Like you'd want to go through this program, rank up enough, and then probably go to the Air Force Academy. That was like kind of the trajectory that they were looking at. One of the things we got to do was orientation flights. So on paper, if you started this program your freshman year, by senior year, if you did everything right and you stuck with it, you would be a private pilot. You would get your private pilot license. Unfortunately, my high school got this my sophomore year. So I had like a ton of flight hours. I was right at the edge. We were like doing stalls, I believe, if I recall correctly. And then, you know, it's one of those situations. My family had to make a decision. You're going to college. Are you going to pay $5,000 to $6,000 of flight school to finish your hours and all of that that it entails? Yeah. Or are you going to, you know, do it or go to college kind of situation? So right. I never got my pilot's license, but I do know how to fly a single engine aircraft, at least Cessnas. And I've always been intrigued. As I got older, it became like a lust for military history. And I watched the like Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin and Boeing like military press conferences because I think they're so cool. When they have like when they displayed the B-21 Raider, I was watching that bad boy live. Like I was hype. But yeah, sorry, that was a weird tangent. But Derek liked playing.
No, I love it. So today we're going to be talking about an accident, well, an incident, really, not an accident.
Big difference.
In the early history of commercial air flight. So today's episode takes us back to October the 10th, 1933, to United Airlines Trip 23. Now, United Airlines Trip 23 was being flown by a Boeing 247. Derek, are you familiar at all with the Boeing 247?
I don't think so. That's like before my expertise. I don't know much about the early days of commercial air travel. Ask me about military history, I might be able to hit you. But yeah, commercial, I think everything after the 707 I could tell you about for Boeing series aircraft, anything before that is ancient history to me.
Well, this is pretty much ancient history as far as avionics go. But one of the really, so the Boeing 247 in some ways was a very large failure of an aircraft, but in some ways was actually extremely innovative, right? So the 247 first flew on February 8th, 1933. So it's really, as a very new plane at the time of when our episode is focused. And it basically is a progression from the B-9 bomber, right? And so this is kind of coming into, it bears like a large resemblance to kind of some of those early like B-17 bombers. I'll drop it in, like early World War II bombers. I'll drop it into the general chat and maybe you can kind of tell me if I'm horribly wrong.
I'll give you a little. Let me give you my amateur's assessment. Real quick, can you give me the aircraft type? Just for the listener, if my responses are late, I'm not ignoring Jim. But unfortunately, I'm getting like huge lag every now and then with his audio. So I'm having a hard time hearing him. What's the aircraft type here?
It is the Boeing. I'll type it in general as well. It is the Boeing 247.
Now, I'll admit, I don't know much about this aircraft, but just looking at it, it looks like a predecessor to Boeing's bomber series that they used in World War II. Like, it looks like the same aircraft body type, obviously, you know, revved down because it's 1933, but it's a gorgeous aircraft. Let me see if I, so you got to think about commercial air travel looking at this picture. You have five windows. So what's this thing sit? 10 people? Is it 10 passengers?
It is. Yeah. So I believe, let me see, cause I've done this. So it's actually 14 passengers. That's what it was originally planned to be. But then,
well, if we know anything about the commercial airline industry, surely they're not going to pack them in there like sardines, right?
No. Well, so one of the problems, one of the things about this aircraft was it was like a 14 is not a lot of passengers,
no.
Right? Especially when there's other competing planes that can fit a lot more passengers. So the 14 passenger thing was actually a really big problem with this design. And then also, there was basically like part of the wing structure went through the cabin. So you had to like step over this piece of the structure of the aircraft if you were trying to traverse the cabin. So there were some problems with it from like a flight, like a commercial airliner standpoint. But there was like a lot of really cool things that this plane kind of helped pioneer and were very like cutting edge at the time. And so it was one of the first aircraft to have like an all metal aluminum design. Like the whole construction was all aluminum.
We were wood before this.
It was, or some sort of combination.
Huh.
And then it was completely, the wings are fully cantilevered. So there's no, guide wires or anything holding the wings up. The landing gear is completely retractable. They have trim tabs, an autopilot feature. They have de-icing technology on this plane. So it's really, for the time, it's really advanced, really cutting edge. And of course, it's powered by two prop motors, right?
Were those Pratt & Whitney, or was that Boeing in-house? Do you know?
They are powered by Pratt & Whitney R1690 Hornet radial engines.
And if I'm not mistaken, this collaboration kind of paved the way for, Boeing partnering with Pratt & Whitney as far as their engine design up until they got major contracts with, what, General Electric, I think? Or was it Rolls-Royce, one of the two?
You'd be better suited to tell me about that.
Just, listener, be aware, these sub-point, I have a feeling Jim hasn't told me, we're doing an airplane miniseries, and that's very exciting for me. But take a note of what companies are working with each other throughout these periods, because if you listen to the news, Boeing's in hot water right now, and allegedly, potentially, may have gotten a guy killed, but we're not going to talk about that just yet.
We'll do that later. We'll go after Boeing later.
Oh, I'm going after Boeing. Come on.
Kill me? So I know, right? That would be ridiculous.
That'd be unheard of.
Unheard of. Absolutely absurd. So the Pratt & Whitney R1690 Hornet radial engine was what was designed originally to be put in the plane. They then later reviewed the concept, and when they actually entered service, they entered service with the R1340 Wasp engines, which are less powerful. Mm. And so they had to reduce passengers to 10.
Makes sense. Probably cheaper too.
Yes, less expensive. And then one of the things was at that time, the aircraft weighed 8 tons, which was very heavy for an aircraft of the 1930s. And there was some concern about the larger engines being too heavy for the existing runways and the infrastructure. So they switched to a smaller engine. And there were some other interesting things about it, but basically, that's kind of what we need to know. There is actually a restroom on board as
well.
There's a toilet as well as a cargo area, which is important as we all get.
That's actually really interesting. So like, hey, if you think about a plane that's 8 tons today, that's what, like your average single engine aircraft, like a smallest trainer prop, maybe a Piper. And I guess Piper would be lighter than 8 tons, but if you think about a commercial airliner, even just a like Cessna Citation, like the Learjets that you see private planes, private jets that rich folks use, they're like, what, tens of tons, if not more? They're, and most of that's fuel weight, to be fair, but they are huge for the same like body size as far as mass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the Boeing 247 went through a couple different iterations, but ultimately it really was outcompeted. Basically, there's another company.
Is it the DC series?
You are correct, Derek. It is the
Donald Douglas coming in hot.
Heck yeah. So the DC 2 and 3, basically, they were way more spacious. They had way more passengers that they could hold. And so it just didn't make sense, right? It's just like this plane holds 10 people and you have to step over stuff in the aisle. The DC series planes don't have those problems and they can carry more people. And so ultimately, the production run for the 247 was cut short, and a lot of them were basically sold off. And because, in 1939, World War II starts, right? 1938, 1939, World War II starts. A lot of these Boeing 247s actually end up as part of the war effort, either as trainers or as reconnaissance vehicles or transports.
Yeah, we weren't wasting steel and in this time. Like anything wasting, that could fly, we got it in the air.
Exactly. And so they were used throughout World War II for various different purposes. And then eventually they actually ended up getting sold to a couple different airline services and stuff. But really, the last one really was flown sometime in the late 1960s as cargo ships.
They lasted a pretty long, like 30 years for a cut production line, and they still had them flying. That's impressive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But again, not in large numbers, in pretty minimal numbers, but still.
Hey, it's interesting. Hey, Boeing wasn't always on top. And what did they do to McDonnell Douglas later? Big Boeing never forgets.
Big Boeing never forgets. Oh, God.
Boeing never forgets. Little BB. Man.
But there is a Boeing 247D that still exists and is in the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., displayed with the two different sets of markings in the United Airlines livery and also in the livery of Colonel Turner's 1934 McRobertson Air Race Colors.
Oh, that's cool.
In the air race.
They raced it?
That's pretty cool. So if you want to see, they did. Yeah. Well, because you strip out all the people and all the stuff. You know, and it's aluminum. It's pretty light airframe at that point, you know.
I was like, can I LS swap a Boeing 247 is the next question.
Exactly. Well, but so also I should go back because this race was actually like a pretty big deal at the time, right? Because this was like during the time when all these companies were trying to prove that their planes were the best and the fastest. And so, basically, this was like, how would you say this? This was like the Baja 1000, but for aircraft of the day, right?
What do you mean by that?
Okay, so the Baja 1000, this is going to get off on a tangent. The Baja 1000 is like this 1,000-kilometer race through the desert of Baja, California. And so companies, you know, Ford will put in, like, a couple of years ago, like, Ford put in a basically unmodified Ford Raptor to run the Baja 1000, to basically prove like how tough the Ford Raptor is, right? That kind of thing. And so
now that sounds tough, Jim. Ford tough.
It's Ford tough. yeah. So like this is the kind of stuff that companies are doing to show off how cool their airplanes are, how fast their airplanes are. And so they entered in this 247D variant. In this aircraft and to try to prove that it was better. And they added like more fuel tanks and stuff like this.
Yeah, you just replace the people with fuel tanks on the inside. And then you got what? Double your range.
Exactly. And they end up coming in play in second place in transport and third overall. Guess who they lost to?
I'm going to take a gander and say McDonnell Douglas. Got him again.
You are right.
Boeing never
got him again
forgets.
With the Douglas DC-2 coming in first place. And
that had to be a real kick in the knackers section. There. Like that couldn't have felt good, yeah. You know?
No, probably not. So that's the plane that we're flying. So let's jump back into October 10th, 1933. So United Airlines Trip 23 crashes near Chesterton, Indiana. And this is kind of a weird event, you know? I mean, obviously, this 1930s, airplanes crashing is not horribly uncommon. But what's kind of weird about this is that eyewitnesses on the ground report hearing an explosion just after 9 o'clock p.m., and they see the aircraft in flames at an altitude of about 1,000 feet, which is very low.
Yeah.
Very low for aircraft. And then a second explosion follows after the airplane crashed. Obviously
they tend to do that
and they do tend to explode on impact. The crash scene is about 5 miles outside of Chesterton on a gravel road in a wooded area near the town of Jackson, near the farm of James Smiley.
Okay.
And so basically, you know, this is like a small town, so this is like the biggest to do in this small town. What do you think happens when a bunch of rednecks see a plane go down?
If it was 2024, I'd say they'd try to LS swap it and put it on Mudders, but I don't know. What do you do back in the 30s?
Well, they do basically exactly what I would do, which is go look at it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nothing to do. Like every... you're in the middle of exactly. Town nowhere. This is the most exciting thing that has ever happened in your life.
Exactly. So basically, all the locals, like, go to the crash site, and they're the first people on the scene. Part of the problem with that is that by the time the investigators actually get there, a lot of stuff is gone. Right?
But they just started looting? Taking
souvenirs. They just started
looting. You just see
the plane.
A crashed plane, and your first thought is to start looting?
I don't think it's the first thought, but like definitely
at least
some
top
people
three.
Did that.
Top three thoughts. Top three. Oh man, is anyone alive? Doesn't look like it. Time to loot.
Basically. And so, yeah, and this was, so basically they start looking through it and it's, they find like some weird stuff has happened. So the toilet and the baggage compartment have been like completely smashed into fragments. The inside of the toilet door is full of metal shards, but the outside is clean. There's no metal shards on the outside of the door to the toilet compartment. That strikes me as odd. Derek, what do you make of that?
I'm thinking someone was probably on the toilet, right? And maybe they had like the 30s equivalent of Taco Bell and it just went south. I have no idea what causes that. And like, all seriousness, what causes metal shavings inside but not outside of the lavatory door?
Well, the Federal Bureau of Investigation had a similar concern that there was someone who had explosive diarrhea inside the bathroom that went a little bit more than the usual Taco Bell experience would have you believe.
Oh, they so used the terrorist sauce?
They used the old terrorist toss, and what they suspect is that basically someone blew up the bathroom and exploded the plane, basically, because the whole tail section of the plane detaches from the plane and is found mostly intact, you know, a fair ways away, almost a mile away from the main wreckage, whereas the rest of the plane, of course, impacts the ground and is mostly destroyed. But the investigation from the FBI states, "Our investigation convinced me that the tragedy resulted from an explosion somewhere in the region of the baggage compartment in the rear of the aircraft. Everything in front of the compartment was blown forward, everything behind blown backward, and things at the side outward." He also noted the gasoline tanks were crushed in, showing that there was no explosion that originated within the gas tanks.
Okay, this is getting weird. This is like some true crime stuff. So we have an explosion from the inside of the toilet. The fuel tanks are out. They didn't explode, so that's fine. I have a theory, and I want to know if I'm wrong, right?
What you got?
I don't know if human feces can make as much like methane emission as like a cow or something. Is it possible that there was enough flammable material in whatever they like porta potty liquid they use and someone smoked a cigarette maybe?
That would be kind of hilarious, but no, that's not what happens. But wouldn't that be like so fitting for the 1930s?
That would be so weird. Like, you'd have to find out the hard way. Like, oh, porta potty, we'll just put the same porta potty liquid that we use on the ground up here. You don't realize it's highly explosive until it's like in a tube.
And then it's just like, having a great smoke today, I'll live forever. And then, you know.
Yeah.
But no, that's not what happens. So the FBI concludes, they find like traces of like nitroglycerin.
Oh, so it's definitely sabotage.
This is the first confirmed case of sabotage of aircraft going down because of sabotage in the United States.
Behind the lesser known time when the Wright brothers put a whoopee cushion on each other in the first flight and they just didn't write that part into the report.
No, they didn't do that one. But
that's really cool.
Yeah,
though.
This was. Yeah, so this is the first proven act of air sabotage in the history of commercial aviation.
And the world was never the same after this day.
Nope. And so there was like a couple things that people were looking into. And so like one of the passengers was seen carrying a brown package onto the aircraft in one of the previous stops. But when they tracked that all down, they found the package in the wreckage and decided it couldn't have been the source of the explosion.
It would have been gone, yeah.
Yeah. They also found a rifle in the wreckage of the plane.
It's the 1930s. That's reasonable, right?
Exactly. And they determined that the passenger was carrying it aboard his luggage.
Yeah. There's no TSA yet.
He was... No, because he was en route to go shoot at Chicago's North Shore Gun Club. So it couldn't have been him.
It's like a murder mystery.
It is. It is a murder mystery. And it is one of... We don't know. It is one of the long... You know, cold cases, unsolved mysteries in aviation.
Oh, wait, the FBI never figured it out?
They never find who did it. They never find who planted the bomb or who set it off.
I think it's time for me to confess something I've been holding on to for the better part of 5 decades. It was me.
It was me.
I got fed up with what the modern airline industry had yet to become.
Ooh.
And I'm sorry.
Derek, I'd be careful to admit that because you know what? You know what Boeing doesn't do?
What do they not do?
They don't forget.
Boeing doesn't forget. And you know what, Jim? If it's Boeing, I ain't going to live.
If it's Boeing, I ain't going.
You know, fun fact about that history anyone that does love the journey that modern aircraft corporations did to become like... You know, the reason that we have the modern CEO and the way it is because of Jack Welch and some of his work under GE and consulting for companies like McDonnell Douglas and Boeing. And it's just so odd that even today, like Boeing's tagline has always been, if it's not Boeing, I ain't going. And they'd put that on commercials because it's just like they're the most reliable aircraft in the world. Oh, how times change.
Dish, Derek, dish.
Dude, I could cook all day on Boeing. Let me have a Boeing episode. I will let them know. I have no stake in the matter. You can't fire me. I don't work for you. You can kill me. But, like, what's that going to do? Make me happy? For the record, if I end up dead in the next few days, I have no intention of dying. Blame Boeing.
I fully would blame Boeing. Well, I think that's our episode for today, Derek. But before we go off the air, I have a couple interesting little tidbits for
us. That was really short.
It was. Yeah. So short and sweet. I figured, because I was planning on doing this one in Hawaii, right? So I was like, let's make one that's kind of short and sweet. And, you know, we can get back to being on the beach. And I was sure we were going to have, like, some preload topics we wanted to cover while we were in Hawaii. So, you know, I wanted to kind of keep it short, but this was the episode that I had.
No, that's awesome. I did not know that about the 247. I had no frame of reference for like, I love that. Like, that's my version of like true crime is airplane disasters. Man, yeah. I watched all of those shows back when they were like airing on Sci-Fi and stuff. Like with, you know, they had the narrator that has the same voice somehow. It was the 5th of December, 2022. Lion Air. It's just that wholesome. Yeah. I could watch it for hours. I never get bored. And this episode, I, as someone who knows a lot about Boeing, I've been reading like about Boeing since 2021, or when Flying Blind came out by Peter Robinson. And sure enough, I have a feeling that some tidbits here, I'm not saying correlation equals causation, but I think some of the decisions we're going to go through these airplane disasters, because you know, there's only like two major airplane companies for commercial air travel, at least in the United States, Airbus and Boeing. I think we're about to see like their villain arc, like how they kind of got into it.
Yeah, we probably will. So, I lost my train of thought.
That's my bad. I derailed the crap out of it.
No, it's okay. No, the train's left the station. But anyway, I think we've got some exciting stuff coming up, Derek, because I was talking with you remember Uncle Bob, right?
I remember Uncle Bob. How could I forget?
Absolutely. So I was talking with Uncle Bob the other day. He has listened to our podcast and he thinks it's awesome. But one of the amazing things about Uncle Bob is his power of knowing everybody.
Yeah. He's a right? well-rounded and networking capacity.
He is amazing. And one of the things that he brought up is that we should look at, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but there's a specific incident in history that we should look at. And as it just so happens, he knows a guy whose family was involved in that incident. And so we basically, I think, have lined up our first podcast guests to be on the show.
Dude, that's huge.
So that, I think that's going to be so awesome. And apparently this guy is just a hoot. So I think it's going to be a great episode.
Freaking eyewitness account? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't him. He wasn't alive for it. But it was his family was involved in this tragedy.
Oh, like a side eyewitness account.
Yeah, yeah. So his family has like the story that's been passed down, you know, through his sires to him about this. So I'm really excited to come, and we'll have to work out when to schedule that and all that stuff. But I'm really excited to have kind of that guest coming in. And of course, Uncle Bob wants to be on the podcast, and I think he'd be it'd be great to have him on for an episode as well. So,
dude, shout out to Uncle Bob. I'm really excited for that. Looking forward to that.
He really enjoyed it. I think
maybe I need to curse less.
No, Uncle Bob, you remember Uncle Bob. He'll fit right
in. I'm part pirate and it shows. Jim,
so anyway.
Dude, I am like, you remember my excitement with the bridge episode where like it came out audibly and I wasn't able to stop it? I was able to stop it this time because I think if I recall the exact quote, our first bridge episode, it was, "We're doing bridges," is how it came out. And I had to be easy my heart because unfortunately, because we tried to film the episode earlier, I knew at least the theme and subject, but I didn't know we were talking about the Boeing 247, which is really exciting. And I have some documentary videos to watch tonight.
Excellent. Yeah, so our next, this is, yeah, going to be the start of our next little mini series. We're going to do some plane stuff, but we might end up with a break in here to talk about this undisclosed incident that we might have a guest appearance for. So I'm very excited about that. So we'll talk a little bit more once we get off the air about when we're going to make that happen and how we're going to do that. But
One last thing,
folks,
to our guest, there has been a lot of folks who have expressed interest in being a guest on the podcast. A lot of folks that we know personally who are now experts in their field. I haven't forgotten about you. My house kind of fell apart. The plan for the first quarter of 2024 was supposed to be, you know, buy the guest kit, ship it out to the first guest. So trust me, that's still happening. We have a lot of experts and we're going to prove beyond a reasonable doubt this year that everything except for incompressible liquids are a spring. Damn it. Everything, like including the season of spring, my emotional well-being, what Taco Bell does to me personally, all of it spring. So we're back, baby. We're back.
We're back. We're back. And with that, let's bounce.
Let's bounce.